This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com.
Philosophy Bites is made in association with the Institute of Philosophy.
Climate change is one of the main challenges of our time, so ancient philosophy might not be the obvious place to look for a solution. But Melissa Lane of Princeton University believes that Plato has some profound insights into our 21st century problems.
Melissa Lane, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Nigel, great to talk to you again.
The topic we're focusing on this time is Plato and sustainability. Could you just start by saying what you mean by sustainability?
Well, in a narrow sense, sustainability is concerned with maintaining the ecosystems, services and functionings that human society depends on, and maintaining that in a way that will be sustainable over time and that it won't be self-undermining. But at the same time, that means that what we want to sustain are those relationships and functionings that we think are valuable. We don't want to sustain those elements of the way that we currently do things that actually either are creating damage to the environment or damage to human society, or that aren't actually stable over time. And so I think that sustainability has to have ethics as much as science at its heart. It has to have an account of what's valuable, and it actually may then be about moving gradually towards a fuller realization of value rather than simply, in a conservative way, sort of maintaining everything about what we already do.
Could you just give an example to clarify exactly what that means?
Well, so for example, if we think about the sustainability of the economic system, at the moment, one of the ways that we measure economic success is in terms of GDP or gross domestic product per capita. But that actually includes social bads in our measurement of what we're doing. So the more prisons we build, you know, that contributes to GDP. Or the cleanup that we do after a waste spill, that counts as GDP, but it would be much better if we hadn't had to do the cleanup in the first place. So that would be an example of some elements of current practices that we don't want to sustain. We want to move towards a situation where we're counting goods in GDP and not also bads.
Okay, so that's sustainability, and that's the question of value in relation to sustainability. But where does Plato come in?
Well, might you ask. The key for me is that when I now am zeroing in on what I'm thinking about in relation to sustainability, it's primarily the social and psychological dynamics of achieving that sustainability. So it's very important that in general people are thinking about the environmental side, but my way of contributing to that is to think about what I call the psychosocial side. And Plato, therefore, was interested precisely in what he called stability, what he would have thought of as the stability of individual dispositions that reinforce a social order that is valuable and don't undermine it. And I think that that model, therefore, of social and psychological stability aiming at something valuable has to be built now into our understanding today of sustainability.
That's particularly apparent in the Republic, isn't it? There is this tripartite structure with the philosopher kings at the top and the workers at the bottom, and in between a military class, and these three different parts in harmony, which also mirrors the harmonious soul. Now, how can that apply to contemporary situations that we find ourselves now in relation to sustainability? I don't quite see why Plato would be particularly useful in telling us how we can get to that stage.
Yeah, I think that's also an excellent question. And I would explicitly say that there are details of Plato's vision that I think are antiquated beyond repair, and particularly the social structure that you mentioned, this very austere and unchanging social structure with a tiny elite at the top dominating a group of workers is problematic. But I think nevertheless that in the course of developing those details, Plato was the first, and I think still the greatest philosopher, to really trace the relationship between individual dispositions and social outcomes. So he shows how the values that an individual holds, even the cultural images that they participate in and internalize, how each of those things and every action that they take can either reinforce or undermine their social structure. It's like if we were thinking of baking bread, it's not that we want to bake exactly the kind of bread that Plato baked, but he reminds us that most kinds of bread require yeast. You know, so he's sort of pointing out a structural element of what we're doing rather than that we want to follow his exact recipe.
Okay, then what is Plato's yeast? Which is the essential ingredient that we should get from Plato here?
It's the relationship of individual virtues which have to be informed by knowledge in aiming at the social good, that individual virtues actually produce actions and are reinforced by actions, which therefore help us to stabilize a valuable and sustainable social order. And that only happens insofar as it's informed by actually knowledge of what's genuinely good.
That's interesting, because in the area of sustainability, many people think that what you need is massive political change. You don't need lots of individuals using the right kind of light bulb or recycling their cardboard. You need commitment on the behalf of nations and agreements that are enforceable, not individuals.
First of all, I would say that individual action is a complement and very often a necessary ingredient to get political action. So I would be far from saying what we want is individual action and not political action. I think we do need political action, absolutely. But how are we going to get that political action? Well, politicians have to feel that there is space for them to act and not to be punished for it. And so individuals can be part of creating a critical mass in order to give politicians the license to act. But also, I think that measures that individuals can take are, in fact, an ingredient of the kinds of economic changes that we need. So if we think about the light bulbs or the eco-efficiency, for example, if we could overall in our homes and offices achieve a 25% more efficient use of energy, then that would be equivalent to installing carbon capture and storage, for example, at something like 800 coal plants. So it's not at all negligible that we should be able to achieve those sorts of actions as individuals that could then be part of the greater economic and technological solution.
You've mentioned the role of the individual here and given it center stage. Is that something that Plato actually does?
Well, I think it's paradoxical because many people would say that, oh, Plato is not a liberal. It's liberals who value the individual, and Plato is the person who thinks that only a very few individuals at the top matter. Now, he does think that these few individuals at the top matter. So if you say, what's his solution? It actually depends on there being one or more few individuals who have a philosophical nature, which is not corrupted by society, who actually pursue knowledge and virtue. And then he actually says, through some necessity, may end up finding themselves in political power, even though that's not what they would want. And what I want to say is his insight that individuals can matter is important, but actually we can broaden it. We can say those individuals may come from any part of society, and they may be able, through their individual action, to change society from the bottom up. So paradoxically, it is Plato who helps us to see that the individuals matter, as long as we relax his assumption about the kind of top-down structure of political change.
Sustainability, as you've described it, is obviously an attractive goal, but it can't be the only thing that people direct their lives towards. Is that what you're saying it should be, that it should be the central goal of a human life, that we live in a sustainable way?
No, I think technically, actually, that sustainability should be more like a constraint on any other goal or good that we pursue. So it should limit the kinds of goods that we think that we can pursue and that we therefore have license to choose to pursue. But the problem is that because we haven't achieved that constraint, we haven't built it into the whole way that our society functions, for a time we may need to focus on it as a kind of temporary end in itself so that we can install it in place and then it can sort of recede into the background, into the structure of society. So I don't think at all that it's the whole good, but I think that we need to recognize it as a component of the good, and that's what we've been failing to do.
I expect lots of people listening to this will be already converted to the goal of some kind of sustainability. But others might be what you call energy hogs, people who think that they can just use whatever they want and it's not for their generation to care about their carbon footprint. You know, if they earn their money legitimately, why shouldn't they spend it on things which will be problems for another generation, which don't really concern them?
There's two responses to that. I mean, one is that actually, it isn't a problem for another generation. It's already a problem for us today. I mean, I think a lot of the extreme climate events that we're starting to already see, we can say that there's an elevated chance that they're linked to climate change that already is affecting us. But I think that the sort of powerful way to answer that actually has been put forward in a book called Carbon Detox by George Marshall, which I see as a kind of unwitting Platonic parable. Because what Marshall says is, the carbon hog should change her ways not because it's the right thing to do or because she ought to, but because it's the smart thing to do. It's the kind of savvy, smart way of living in the 21st century. And I think that's a deeply Platonic solution. It's a more drawn out process, but it's like Mill's argument that it doesn't make sense to use your freedom to sell yourself into slavery. It doesn't make sense to make choices that you think are aiming towards a good that ultimately are going to undermine your ability to achieve any good.
Are you saying it couldn't be rational to be a free rider given that other people are making sacrifices or choosing what you would call the smart options?
I mean, it becomes a question of what we mean by rationality. Even in terms of a very limited account of rationality, I think that at least we can say it's not irrational not to be a free rider. And I think that's an important argument to be able to make, because sometimes the claim that one should free ride is kind of a claim that you're being a patsy or a mug if you don't. And actually, on my account, we can say playing a role in advancing the cause of sustainability is in itself something that it makes sense for you to care about and that you can actually see yourself as making a real contribution to, both through the instrumental and the indirect effects of your action in helping to change the sort of imagination of what's normal.
There are huge individual differences in the activities and components of things that we think make up a worthwhile life. And I'm just aware of some people who differ very much from me. They like motor racing, for instance. That's not a green activity by any stretch of the imagination. But for some people, that's part of a good life for them. If there were no motor racing, life wouldn't be worth living.
This is a challenging question. And I think that, you know, in a way, it's going to be up to democratic processes to kind of work out where these lines should be drawn. But what I would say about it is that we've always accepted, even on a very impeccably liberal principle like Mill's harm principle, we've always said you can't do activities that lead to direct harm to others. The question that I think the environmental challenge poses is how do we redefine the limits of that harm? And I think we're already starting to see cases in tort law, for example, where people say, actually, these activities are causing harm to others. And we saw them before as within the protected zone of the personal prerogative. And then now I think we're going to have to move towards a redefinition of what that means. So I think that on this issue, actually, it's easier to find a common ground between a Platonic and a liberal approach. I think that we're not used to this way of thinking about what activities cause harm. It's a conception of harm that we haven't been accustomed to, but that isn't to say that it isn't a real harm and that it isn't one that even on a liberal understanding we would see as a harm.
Seems to me that Plato in the Republic is concerned with an idealized version. If you could control everything, you would design society this way. Mm. Is that what you're saying? Your vision is that yours is just an ideal that you're holding up rather than something that's practically achievable.
My hope is, but it's a bet rather than a certainty, that we can achieve the kinds of transformations that we need through democratic processes and through a kind of bottom-up transformation. Plato didn't think that. I think that he might have been wrong about that. But I think the jury is still out on whether we can have a democratic capitalist society that really achieves sustainability. We haven't done that yet. And if we don't, in the end, it's going to catch up with us. So I think the burden on us is to show that it actually can be done. In terms of what's practical, some of the changes that a Platonic vision would inspire us to would be to stop allowing people to define their environmental goals and achievements in relative terms. You get a lot of companies, for example, in their sustainability report saying we were 10% better than we were the year before, or we've achieved a greater carbon efficiency of our production, but then the production is still going up. So the overall carbon footprint is still going up, even though the carbon intensity per unit is going down. And I think what a Platonic vision challenges you to do is to say it's not enough to be less bad. You actually have to start to take responsibility for aiming at a full realization of the good in a much more transformative way.
We've been talking about Plato and sustainability, but obviously Plato didn't actually write about sustainability.
No, that's right. And I've been talking very loosely about Plato would say this and Plato would say that. What I mean to be saying, though, is that I'm engaging with Plato as a kind of constructive appropriation. And so although I am also a Plato scholar and I work on understanding what Plato meant in the context of his interventions in the political and intellectual life of his own time, here I'm using him to make an intervention in the political and intellectual life of our time. And so I'm kind of drawing on him and kind of offering ways of thinking about that.
Melissa Lane, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nigel.
There's now a Philosophy Bites book published by Oxford University Press. For more information, go to www.philosophybites.com.
For more information about the Institute, go to www.philosophy.com. www.sas.ac.uk.